It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 24th edition of Wayne's Comics. Thanks for listening. This week I speak with David Baxter, one of the creative forces behind Marksman, a great comic that I'm enjoying. Then I'll get to talk with Ian Cullen and Gianluca Glaser as we talk about all kinds of different things comics related, which I think you'll enjoy. And then the return of the peek into your local comic store, which I'm sure you won't want to miss. So let's get to it. Talking today with David Baxter, one of the creative forces behind Marksman, a new comic that's coming out and that I enjoy a lot. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing fine. And in fact, Marksman did come out, at least the first issue.
Right.
It premiered at Comic-Con, but the second issue is going to be coming out on the 24th.
Great. I'm looking forward to that. I like the story real well, and I think the art's kind of fun, too, so it's a good thing. We'll get to that, but I understand you, like me, are an experienced comic reader, as I like to put it. You were telling me before we started recording about which book that you bought first.
Well, my earliest books were Fantastic Four and Spider-Man. And this must have been in the, the very late 60s, early 70s. And, I think I learned my vocabulary from Reed Richards. I mean, it was really kind of a funny thing. But so I suppose Stan Lee is responsible in part for my education.
You know, I have to tell you a really quick funny story is that my brother and I, when we went to first grade, they asked us to read something, and we started to read it, and they would drag us from room to room up to, like, third graders and make us read stuff, and they were like, he's a first grader, he reads better than you. It's because we had been reading Justice League of America. Our mom would park us each on – we're identical twins. We would sit on each side of her on the bed, and she would read to us, and we would ask, what's that word, and what's that word? And so we got a – just like you, we had an education before we ever got to school.
Well, I think comic books, you know, especially in the 60s and the 70s, you know, they were written for kids, but, you know, they would sneak stuff in there. I mean, it was a very different time period, but it was a great way to learn. It really was. You know, if you didn't want to read all books with no pictures, it was a wonderful way to get information and to build a vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. You know, I knew what the multiple states of matter were because there was a Justice League story where they went to a place and there was a fire person and there was an air person and there was a ground person. I was like, those are the three states of matter. Oh, you know, they were teaching me science and I didn't even know it.
You know, I aspire to that in my writing. You know, if there's a way that you can entertain and at the same time educate, even better.
Yeah. Now, you went on to you've been working in television and I think film, too. You wrote an episode of Star Trek Voyager.
I was working at Star Trek as an assistant to a producer there in the last season of Star Trek: The Next Generation. And when they were trying to figure out what they were going to do for the next series, they literally asked everybody for ideas, and they bought one of my ideas, a story which came out. It was the second episode of Star Trek Voyager called "Time and Again." Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun because I've always been interested in science fiction, and, you know, Star Trek for me was sort of the perfect place to tell interesting sci-fi stories. You know, you use the characters, but you're telling, you know, something that would have an impact on people and that you couldn't otherwise get at.
You know, it's funny to say this, but I actually have a Star Trek script. I belong to a group of people. We're writing sort of like scripts for classic Trek for like fan films and things like that. And I actually have a script. I know that's very Hollywood to say that you have a script, but I actually do, which is just a funny thing to say.
What's even more interesting is that Star Trek was one of the very, very few shows that allowed outsiders to submit material. For the most part, you couldn't. You know, you'd have to go through an agent or you'd have to have a lawyer submit. It was a very difficult process for people who want to break into Hollywood. But Star Trek was one of the very few places that did that. In fact, I think Ron Moore, who went on to do Battlestar Galactica, I think that's how he got his job there, coming out of college, was a submission. It was a really awesome place to work.
Very cool.
You know, to be a part of that is even in a small way is really exciting. And the other thing is it, in a way, brought me into the comics field because at that time I had met a gentleman by the name of Ray Wyman. I don't know if you know him, but he co-wrote a book about Jack Kirby, his art. And Jack loved Star Trek. And right before Jack's death, I tried to hook him up with the folks at Star Trek. And they really were interested in having him write a story for Star Trek. But unfortunately, he died. Mm-hmm. But because of that, I met Roz Kirby and Tracy, his granddaughter. And that was really my sort of first introduction to sort of to a lot of the folks in the comics world.
Kirby's still one of my very favorite artists of all time. It's very dynamic, very visual in a sense that not every artist can do. And so I still think everybody's trying to be Jack Kirby in the comics industry, in my opinion.
Well, I don't know if anyone's ever going to be able to do that. I've never encountered an artist like him. Obviously, you know, he was the Fantastic Four artist. And he was just a great guy. That whole family was really, they were wonderful people. So
Very cool. Well, yeah, it was a perfect segue into talking about your comic book, Marksman. How did that come to be? How did you get to put that together and get that into print?
Well, I've mostly made my living as a screenwriter. I'm in the Writers Guild. And through a friend, I was introduced to a young, dynamic producer named Michael Benaroya. And Michael, besides producing feature films, for the most part independent feature films, had started a comics division. He wanted to get some comics published. At first, he had been interested in my potentially writing a screenplay based on one of his ideas, which was for this comic Marksman. And you know, I had gone through the material and he had said he wasn't satisfied with it. It was very heavy into superpowers and dystopia. It was set in the future. And he said, look, you can do anything you want with it. Just keep the title and set it in the future and the rest is up to you. And I had said to him, you know, you might think about doing this as a graphic novel. And he said, sure, go for it. So really, I lucked into it. You know, people work for years trying to get the opportunity. I basically just said, look, I love comics and I've read a heck of a lot of them. And in fact, I would say that a lot of my experience in screenwriting has come from reading comics and learning to think visually. So that's how I got my break. And I then introduced Michael to Dave Elliott, who you probably know. Dave's a wonderful editor. And it was he who brought various titles that Michael was working on with various talented artists and writers to Image. And so that's how the whole thing kind of got started.
Well, why don't you, for those people who didn't get the first issue, talk a little bit about what the basic premise of Marksman is.
Sure. One of the things I really wanted to do was I wanted to do a superhero comic without any superheroes in it, where it was really grounded in some kind of reality, but something that would be interesting for people. And the mythology that I approached it, there were a couple of themes I wanted to explore. But one thing I really wanted to get at, sort of as a commentary on where things are today, was this idea that it takes place in a country in the United States that has totally collapsed. And it wasn't because of a zombie attack. It wasn't space aliens. It was just unending recession. And the terrible impact that just people being out of work can have. I mean, as we saw in Nazi Germany, it led to a dictatorship. But in this scenario, I posited that it would lead to another civil war, where those states that had the greater resources would fight to keep them, and the country's infrastructure would be destroyed by this. And soon afterward, only those cities that could self-sustain without trade survived. So Marksman takes place in New San Diego. San Diego, besides being the home of Comic-Con, is also the home to several Navy and military bases. You know, the Navy SEALs train there, the Marines train there. And I spoke to different people in the military, different people in the science community to sort of see if I can get this right. But the idea was that the Navy SEALs would effectively be the muscle needed to protect the city while the technologists would figure out a way to desalinate the water using the nuclear power from the submarines that the military had and farming the ocean for food. And, you know, I created sort of a technological utopia, sort of what if Steve Jobs tried to save a city and he had the military to, you know, power to do it. And the marksmen are effectively, you know, a generation or two past the Navy SEALs and the Marines. It's sort of these are their kids are now the ones protecting the walls. And the main character is a guy named Drake McCoy. And unlike the vast majority of people in the city who are all intimately connected through their technology, rather than iPhones or Android phones, they have what are called shades, which are basically all the same stuff, but it's put into a pair of hip-looking sunglasses that are heads-up displays. Mm-hmm. But everybody knows everybody's business. Mm-hmm. Our main character is kind of a Clint Eastwood type. He does not feel comfortable with this technological encroachment. And so he's the guy who volunteers to go out of the city to collect technology that they need to do reconnaissance. And so the first issue really has to do with our introducing this character, Drake McCoy, the kind of guy he is. And while he's out on one of these technology-seeking adventures, he's attacked by some sort of Mad Max types, the people who survived outside the city. Mm-hmm. And he's saved by a group of people from another city, almost a mythological city called Lone Star, mm-hmm. which would have been in what we call Texas, probably Dallas. Mm-hmm. And our story sort of starts with this group warning him that the folks from Lone Star want the technology that New San Diego has. Mm-hmm. And that's really where we start off.
I had the chance to read the book, and I really, really like it. I love, like you, I like a little sci-fi mixed in with my comics. And so this, to me, was a great read. But I just got to ask you, you know, based on what we're going through now, this is kind of a haunting parable about what...
Listen, this all came, you know, I came up with this, you know, well over... It was actually a couple of years ago when I first started thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that hasn't been lost on me. There are a lot of things that are making me really creeped out about this. But I have to say that an important theme of the story, and this is not going to spoil it, is, you know, this idea of unification. It has kind of a Arthurian legend theme going, you know, the idea of reuniting, you know, the United States. And so hopefully there is sort of a silver lining in all of this, but we've got to get through a lot of action and destruction before we can get to that part.
Well, you know, I enjoy that about the book is that it's very action oriented. But, you know, it has a Star Trek feel to it in some senses in that you're communicating a message, but there's action and adventure happening along the same time with it. So that's one of the things I really enjoy about the book. Great fun to read.
Well, I'm glad you liked that. One of the sort of the nicer comments that I got at Comic-Con, because we did a signing on the Marine base at the Top Gun base. Mm-hmm. The military men and women really liked the juxtaposition of technology with sort of a Western theme. I mean, I know that Cowboys and Aliens came out, but this is kind of fun to see a character in combat armor riding a horse. Mm-hmm. Just to mix it up. I really like these kinds of mashups if there's a way to do it organically.
Mm-hmm. Well, it worked real well. I really, really like it. Now, how many issues are there to Marksman?
It's a 6-issue limited series at this point. We've gotten a lot of great feedback. I'm really hoping that we'll do a second series and make a second trade paperback, because I believe that's where this is going to go. The first 6 issues will eventually be a trade paperback.
It's probably a little easier if you do 6-issue series rather than try to maintain an ongoing comic, because it allows you some time to do some screenwriting and stuff in between. So,
well, absolutely. I've got a couple of different things in the hopper. My specialty in screenwriting actually has to do with telling true stories, based on nonfiction stuff. I love research, and that has helped so much with Marksman. And I really have to thank all the military folk who've given me advice here and there.
So possible second Marksman series. Of course, I should encourage us all to go out and buy the
first
one.
Yes, if you buy them, there will be a second series.
Oh, that's good to hear. Any other projects you want to tell us about that we should know about?
Well, in the comics world, not at this point. I mean, I'm just really, really happy to be part of the community. I've been going to Comic-Con since I moved out to California. So, you know, which is, you know, more than, I think I went the first year that it was at the convention center. So is that 93, 94, something like that.
Wow.
But to be on the other side, instead of waiting to get a signature, but to give a signature and to sign a comic has just been a super treat. I'll save my future stuff for a future interview.
Okay.
Just because there are things in the hopper that I think I need to keep on the lowdown at this point. But all good stuff.
Okay. Lou, hopefully we get to talk with you again and find out those things. Like I said, I enjoy the book very much, and I really think that it's a great comic. And you know, I would encourage anybody who hasn't picked up issue one to go back and get that, because now's a good time to jump on. So I look forward to it. I appreciate being able to talk with you, David. Good stuff. I hope we get to see a lot more from you.
Oh, thank you, Wayne. I've really enjoyed this. And thanks for all you people in the ether for listening.
Okay. Thanks a lot, David.
Take care.
Okay, and now it's time for news and previews with our usual cast of characters, Gianluca Glazer and Ian Cullen. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I'm not very well. I'm really ill.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, so I'm really sick.
Oh, well, as long as you don't go and sound like a goose in the other room, I think we'll be all right. That's an in joke there for we did a special one time, and Ian thought that by going in the other room he could actually muffle the sound. Didn't quite work out that way.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get my kitchen and this front room soundproofed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, why don't we talk about you had some things. You got books this week, Ian, and that's always a big event. So why don't you talk about you had some stuff today. Then we'll go to Gianluca.
Well, I've got books this week, but I've not read them yet. I read The Trade. I only got them today.
Wow.
And I only had time to read a trade paperback that I got. But I got Batman Beyond issue 8, which is the last issue, mm-hmm. Because they're putting up to January. Planet of the Apes issue 4. Mm-hmm. Rocketeer Adventures issue 3, which has a very sexy cover.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Batman and Robin, David Hein and Greg Tassini. It's a cover with the Eiffel Tower poking his eye out.
Yeah, and that's something.
It's really cool. It's Greg Tocini, and that's very much like, it looks like something from The Prisoner, that cover.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice cover, but you know, I'm so like getting a bit tired of the book, Batman and Robin. So I'm going to discontinue.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a standalone issue, and this is a self-contained story. It's done by David Hein, mm-hmm. and I suggest you really give it a chance. Only I guess in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter, because next month will be the totally relaunched new crew, you know, for Batman and Robin. But I particularly like this.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of sad as I read these last ones. I mean, there were several that came out this week that were final ones. Batgirl, Red Robin, a whole bunch of ones. I think Birds of Prey. I might be wrong on Birds of Prey, but several of them that, you know, it's kind of sad to read the last one. And I was talking to Ian earlier about the Batman, the Brave and the Bold, the last episode has aired. And it's a very cute episode where Batmite kind of decides he's had enough, that the show is jumping the shark. So he tries to push the show as far as he can so that people will stop watching. And what he does is he turns Batman into all these action figures that they sell in the stores, but you never see on the screen. You know, he was the Art of Climber Batman, for example, and he was the luge riding Batman. And it was kind of interesting. It was kind of a cute thing. It ended really well. You know, Batman has a nice inspirational speech at the end and basically says goodbye, which is kind of nice. But it was kind of fun to read that. It's funny this is hitting all at the same time as the new 52 business is happening, and all these DC Comics are coming to an end. It's sad to see. You know, I still feel really bad about it, but you know, I guess I'll get over it when the new ones all come out. Anyway, did you have something else that you want to bring up about that, Ian?
Well, I've got Action Comics 903, mm-hmm. and that's the last one. Mm-hmm. And I got Galactica 1980, which is a Mark Guggenheim trade paperback. It was a miniseries a few years back.
You said you liked it.
Mm. I loved it. In fact, that's my best of the week. I've been waiting for months for it to come out. It was meant to come out in May, but they put it back, and it came back came out late July. Mm-hmm. It's a really good story, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with Galactica 1980, the TV series from 1980.
I watched every one of them.
It was very, very, let's say, dumbed down for the children. Had Super Scouts in and stuff like that.
Yep.
If you're expecting Super Scouts, don't get the trade paperback. Completely different tone.
Right. It was, right. You know, it was the Galactica, they kind of, ABC had changed their minds and decided they canceled it too soon. So they made a summer series back at then, and they couldn't get any of the original actors back except for Lauren Green, I think. And so they had to, it was like a Next Generation sort of a setup. But, you know, it was very, some of them were good. Some of them were outright darn stupid silly. And the worst one was when they discover Earth, it's our Earth in 1980, and they're afraid to let the Cylons know. And so what they do is they just go right past Earth. And I sat there and said, wow, that was really uninteresting. You know, so it was an interesting thing. There's still a lot of people who really like that. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of people like the miniseries too. So I'm glad you liked it.
Actually, Wayne, not a lot of people don't like Battlestar Galactica 1980. In fact, it's actually the bastard child of Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
As in, most fans will not acknowledge the existence of Battlestar Galactica 1980. They'll only acknowledge the existence of one episode, which is called The Return of Starbuck.
Right.
And that was the first episode of the series.
Right.
Not many people found it interesting. It was universally despised.
Well,
a majority of the fans.
I guess I know enough people that I know some people who really liked it, and I guess that tells me what kind of taste they have, but there are fans of the show out there, I know. But, you know, to be honest, every show has fans, you know, on television, so.
To give you an idea, Adama tries to blow his brains out right at the beginning of the episode, and the only thing that prevents him from doing it is there's an emergency, and the emergency is Galactica's found Earth.
Yeah.
The characters are much different. Three main characters get killed off in the course of this four issue miniseries, which came out 2 years ago. It's just come out and trade. So basically, it kills off three main characters, which is something that not even Ron Moore's series dared to do.
So, very cool. So you'd recommend it then?
I'd highly recommend it. You know, I'd highly recommend it to anyone who was disappointed in Galactica 1980, like me, and would like a version which was probably a little bit more truer to what would have happened.
Okay.
You know, had they had the budget. If you look at the comic of it, you know, they simply would not have had the budget to do it on television back in 1980.
Okay. Okay, Gianluca, you've got, since we're not doing the best and the bust of the week on the SFP now, why don't you give your best and bust of the week?
Sure. I mean, there were a number of bests that I had for this week. Criminal Last of the Innocent number 3 came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. I've been enjoying this series. So the previous issue dealt with the deed occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And now that it's happened, now it's this issue deals with the cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely highly recommend people to check out, pick up issues 1 and 2 if you haven't,
mm-hmm.
if you like crime.
Mm-hmm.
Batman and Robin number 26, I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
David Hein wrote this. He's the kind of guy that's just a really good writer, but DC or, you know, Marvel gives him stuff to do with the that Spider-Man Noir miniseries. But with DC, he's just always kind of like a filler, kind of, you know, he does filler issues, mm-hmm. you know, in between like the big stars. So that's kind of what this issue is. It's a self-contained one-shot story involving an Arkham Asylum in France. Greg Tocchini did the interior artwork. I don't remember offhand who the cover artist is, but I really love that cover image. So it's really cool. I highly recommend it. And, you know, hope more DC David Hein happens, you know, maybe after some 52 titles drop out.
Well, I've got something interesting to add here. Have you guys mm-hmm. ever heard of a comic book? Let's see, it's called Menorah. I'm trying to find it. It's by an artist and writer called Roman Dirge.
Mm-mm. I don't know that one.
Mm-mm.
And he started off as an online comic thing, but they've released it in a series of trades, and it's called Menorah, and it's about a little dead girl. it's kind of like how can I describe it? A typical sort of like Disney fairy tale mixed with Tim Burton.
Ooh.
So it's kind of dark and twisted, but funny.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Anyway, I was sent a book from Titan this week, and it's called Taxidermied, The Art of Roman Dirge. It's an it's a hardcover, and it's got a lot of interesting, a lot of his artwork in.
Oh, cool.
And it's some really very, very cool, very alternative stuff. Like he's done a seahorse. He's got one of a giraffe, and then he's got one of an angel. And it's all artwork from his dreams as well. It's all like artwork from things that he's observed, and he's usually put his own twisted worldview on it. Mm-hmm. Well, it's got chapters. Let's see. Give me an example. Chapter one, sketches. Chapter two is artwork. Chapter three is on like scary tales, which is basically pictures from his scary tales. Chapter four is monster, which is basically monsters, and chapter five is funny bones. It's very dark and twisted, strange looking artwork, but it's kind of cute as well.
Okay, and who prints that again?
Interesting.
It's
Titan Books.
From Titan Books.
Okay.
Called Taxidermied, the Art of Roman Death.
Yes.
Okay. And they also publishes Nanora trade paperbacks.
Okay. Okay, that's different. John Luke, you said you had a couple more.
I did have a few more. Yeah. American Vampire: Survival of the Fittest, number 3, by Scott Snyder and Sean Phillips. Again, you know, the previous issues, two issues, kind of set up like this kind of double agent, this agent thing, you know, coming down there. It involves Nazis, this particular story, and a scientist that may have the cure for vampirism. And I highly recommend this book too, you know, this comic too. It's really good. Red Spike number 4 came out,
mm-hmm.
From Ben Arroyo Publishing, released through Image Comics. Really great. A lot of action episodes this week. You know, American Vampire had a lot of action. Red Spike has a lot of action involving the Lincoln Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
The cover is pretty cool. You see the Lincoln's head being used as a giant boulder to be thrown at somebody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also this week, Blue Estate number 5. If you like crime, and if you love Pulp Fiction, you know, that kind of humor, mm-hmm. then you'll definitely enjoy Blue Estate number 5.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Money Shot, this particular issue. And it involves a private investigator's surveillance photos. Missed the big picture when Hollywood starlet Rachel Maddox is forced to gamble for her brother's life. Let your freak flag fly as hippies, mobsters, and garden gnomes collide in part 5 of this fast, funny, 100% cool new series. Mm. So I highly recommend that book. The cover is gorgeous, too.
Scary. Garden gnomes.
Yes. But the cover is just really cool if you look at it. It's got this lady sitting on top of a camera lens. And just the level of detail that Victor Kalvachev, he's one of the artists. There's like a variety of artists in the book, and they change during different parts of the story, but it's done very seamlessly.
Mm-hmm.
But he does the covers. He's a co-writer in the book, and he does parts of the interior. But his covers are just amazing if you look at all of them. But this one in particular is just so cool because there's like a roll of film going above the camera, and he kind of worked in the price and all this stuff, but you don't even catch it at first. But, you know, you look at it, it's just kind of neat how he does this.
Mm.
So cool. I want to recommend that. And then the final book I recommend is Dark Horse's Baltimore, Cursed Spells, number 1.
Mm.
Now, I didn't even know about this title really till Free Comic Book Day when I got the Baltimore and Criminal Macabre flip book. But I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So I checked this book out, and it seems like it's a pretty cool story so far.
Mm-hmm.
It does involve, like, vampires and monsters. And this character, Baltimore, is basically like a monster hunter. The art style, it's co-written by Mike Mignola.
Mm-hmm.
So the art style, even though it's not him on the art, looks very much like him, mm-hmm. you know, which I find interesting in, like, all of his work. Mm-hmm. Whether he's just only a writer on it, they definitely pick – you know, artists and colorists that can definitely mimic his style.
Mm, cool.
So, that's it for this week.
All right. Let me throw a couple of mine in there real quick. I've got to mention, I agree with you on Red Spike number 4. That was a great comic. I love that book. I think that's such a great book. Red Wing number 2 came out, which I happen to like. Jonathan Hickman, who does FF for Marvel's doing this one. Kind of a sci-fi time travel thing, and I really like that book. Second one is just as good as the first. I also liked War of the Green Lanterns Aftermath number 2 of 2. We're coming to see what's happening to the Green Lantern Corps after the war has hit them, and it's quite they've shaken things up quite a bit. I like it a lot. So that one's a good one. But the two ones I really like, and I'm a Batman fan, so and it's kind of hard to please me, really. I did write this in my column on the site, was the Batman 80-page Giant 2011 number 1, which was good, and also I didn't expect to really like this as much as I did, but Detective Comics 881, which is the conclusion of a very twisted storyline. The Gordon family, you know, Commissioner Gordon and his daughter and his son and everybody has really suffered.
His crazy son.
Yeah, that's what happened. This is sort of the resolution of that story, and it is really way out there. This is my favorite one where Dick's in the bat suit, and I really thought that he was the perfect Batman for this one. I know he's not going to be in it much longer. He'll be Nightwing soon, but I thought this was a really good one. It was a very unusual book, so those were the ones that I really, really, really liked this week.
Hmm. Well, I've got one more that I read this week. I finally read it. Yeah, you ready?
Yes, mm-hmm. Just now.
You ready? I finally read it this week. Yes. Dick Turpin and Vereska's Death.
Yes.
I finally read it. It was a really good story. It was a very simple story. Mm-hmm. It wasn't overly complex. Basically, Dick and his old gentleman, Jim or somebody, they hold up some sort of like some travellers along Epping Forest, and they get away, and as they wander off, they sort of like meander into a town entirely populated by zombies.
What a surprise.
Uh-oh. Didn't expect that.
and they kind of sort of like manage to get safe haven in a church, and I'm not going to say anything else because it's only a 24-page one-shot. And if I say anything else, I'll ruin it for you. But they get away in the end.
I mean, is it like Army of Darkness, kind of like undead killing action, or is it more like realistic, I guess, in terms of like Walking Dead kind of zombie, run and fight and hide kind of thing?
I think it's probably kind of run, fight and hide kind of thing. But the plot twist is, you know, I don't really want to say too much because it'll ruin a little twist. It's got a little bit of a plot twist and, you know, when you're reading it, you don't necessarily expect it to happen. It's very subtly done. I'll send it to you.
What he's not telling you is that aliens come down and involve themselves in the action.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
It kind of keeps the...
Actually, Iron Man.
kind of keeps the origin of the zombies kind of, you know, ambiguous. It doesn't really, you know...
I see.
You know, so it's sort of...
I see. It's the witch doctor from the Goon comic books. He's involved.
Yeah. And he doesn't know Dickie.
Yes, I know. Came to the town, started making zombies.
Never mind.
Okay, why don't we get to the news then? Gianluca, you got some news for us?
Yeah, there's news. Marvel senior editor Ralph Macchio is retiring. Ralph Macchio actually is very well respected and well loved senior editor. He worked on Frank Miller's run of Daredevil, Walt Simonson's run on Thor, and he did the Stephen King series that were going on, you know, with Marvel. So now he's retiring. He's going to be, you know, writing now. So hats off to you, Ralph Macchio. Mm-hmm. and best of luck with all your sweep the leg. Sorry, all your future endeavors.
Okay.
All right. July sales are down. I kind of mentioned that bit of July sales last week. Wanted to give you a little more clarification with what ICB2 has published. So they released the full 300 titles for July. Marvel took the top three spots. I'd mentioned that before. You had that wonderful Spider-Man 666 episode, you know, where everyone has Spider-Man powers.
Mm-hmm.
Great story. But, so Marvel took the top three spots and 15 out of the top 25 spots. But DC's share in the market did increase this month and came close to Marvel's, in fact. They had, you know, they and yeah, it's not even the 52 launch yet. But they had a number of titles in the top 25. They went from 8 in June to 10 in July. So that was part of the reason they've had a market share increase. Mm-hmm. They also had 14 titles in the top 25. So interesting, you know. Interesting facts about this.
I've got a little bit of British comics news.
Okay.
I just wanted to mention one thing, though. You know, Mark Waid, he debuted a new Daredevil for Marvel, and that was finished number 6. So that is something to note. So go on. Sorry.
It's just very quick bit of British news. Brian Talbot has released a first look at his third Granville book, and I think it's called Bête Noire. I don't know if you've read Granville. Have you seen Granville, John?
I don't think I've heard of it. So, who publishes it?
I think it's published through Bantam Books here. I'm not sure. But he's done two so far. He did Granville, the first one, and Granville Monomore last year. And it's basically about, you know, the books are beautiful. It centers on a steampunk alternate future, which is populated by anthropomorphic animals with a history in which Napoleon successfully conquered Britain. Hmm. I've got to say, the books are absolutely beautiful to look at. And the story usually follows Detective Inspector Archibald Archie Brock of Scotland Yard, who's pretty much a badger with attitude. In each book, he's usually on a case. Like in the first book, he uncovers a conspiracy, which threatens to, you know, kick off another war between Britain and France.
Oh my goodness!
And in the second one, the second one's kind of a continuation from that. Mm-hmm. And the third one that comes out this year, they're very good books, very good stories. It's kind of like Wind of the Willows, only it's set in a city, and mix it up with Quentin Tarantino, and you're probably halfway there.
It's a very good book, and they are anthropomorphic animals, but the story is really adult in its perspectives, and I really like it. This is a really good book.
The cover art has been released for the third book. There's no actual date of release for it as of yet. The last couple of years, it's usually been released at a Thought Bubble convention in Leeds. So I'm hoping that'll be the case this year, because it gives me a reason to go Leeds. Mm-hmm.
Do you think they'd ever have a crossover with Dick Turpin?
I don't think Steve Tanner's quite in quite Brian Talbot's, to be honest.
We're not ready to join the Turpinverse.
Nah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, what sort of animal would Dick be, though?
I know, that's the whole idea. He should just regularly be Dick Turpin, and he doesn't know, like, how does Dick Turpin come across zombies? He obviously didn't in real life. It's fiction, you know. Maybe he accidentally finds himself in the strange animal human hybrid world.
That's my bit of UK comics news this week.
Okay. Gianluca, anything else you've got to share with us?
The Hollywood Reporter has a great article on Frank Darabont and his being fired from The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. It is kind of interesting. It's kind of sad, too. There's interesting points made in it, though. Apparently, there was already before the first season was even filmed, AMC had already done a deal where the second season was going to be like less budget per episode as opposed to the first season.
Right.
And apparently that seemed to be a very poor sticking point. And it's kind of hard to say what exactly was that got Frank fired. Obviously, with the show, the theme of the show being zombies and anybody can get killed off at any time, none of the actors are going to speak out against it, you know, about what's been happening, you know, because obviously they like being on the show for as long as they can be. Another thing that was interesting, though, in the Hollywood Reporter was that AMC is like a full owner of the show. They don't share it with any other studios, unlike their other hits, Mad Men and Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. So they kind of shared, like, you know, with like Lionsgate and Sony, I think, respectively, ownership of those shows. But with The Walking Dead, they fully own the show, you know. So it is kind of interesting. I mean, obviously, from what was read in the article, Frank Darabont seems to be kind of a difficult guy to work for, but one that supports his crew and wants people paid, you know, the way they should be for the hard work that they do. And also at the same time, the studios, you know, don't want to create that of an expensive show. The first season was only like 6 episodes, so I guess they could afford to have spent more money per show episode. But with like the second season being an actual full season, which I think probably would be like at least double the amount of episodes, I guess they didn't want to kind of have to spend that much money. So it is kind of interesting. Robert Kirkman is still involved, you know, very much with the series. So it will be interesting to see what the second season is like. Also, the timing, too, is kind of weird because, you know, Darabont was fired just a few days after being at the San Diego Comic-Con panel, talking about the show and sounding very eager to be working on it. Mm-hmm. Very interesting developments there.
Is Gail Ann Hurston attached?
I'm not sure. It doesn't really talk about him in the article. I'm not even sure who that is off the top of my head.
He's a co-creator of Terminator. She created a Terminator with James Cameron back in 1984. And she was one of the executive producers on Walking Dead. She sort of like came on board with Darabont.
Oh, that's very interesting. I mean, I guess we'll know more when the season starts. But there was no mention, like I said, of any other staff changes other than Frank Darabont being let go.
Very, very different. I mean, they don't have long before the show hits the air. It's supposed to hit in the middle of October, so they're going to have to get themselves together.
They're not going to take the opportunity to launch it on Halloween again?
No. It's going to be like October 15th or 16th.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, I think it's October 16th because that's a Sunday. Yeah, I know. I really did like the...
I'm sure they'll do like a season one marathon or something.
You never know. You never know. Okay, I guess...
You never know.
All right, so how about previews? What's coming up? What have we to look forward to? Gianluca, you got something you want to bring up?
Yeah, I mean, August 17th, Samurai's Blood number 3 comes out. It's from Ben Arroyo Publishing and Image Comics. It's a really good story. You have Owen Wiseman as the writer and Nam Kim as the artist on it. And basically, you know, it's a really cool revenge story. So, and it takes place in the feudal Japan times. It's not your typical kind of samurai, you know, hokey action kind of thing. It's a real in-depth story, you know. It's got a brain to it. So if that's something you're looking for, I highly recommend checking it out. You know, I looked through, you know, Midtown Comics' release of, you know, what they have listed for sale next week. And I really didn't see anything that just kind of wowed me at all. This past week was really good. There was just so much good stuff that all I really could even note was that Blue Water has some interesting bios out. If you like Madonna, Ian, I could see that. You can pick up Female Forces Madonna from Blue Water. Charlie Sheen gets his bio from Blue Water. And then, 50 Cent. Yeah.
50 Cent.
What's he's kind of disappeared, you know, since that feud with Kanye West. Thankfully, 50 Cent has disappeared. So thank you, Conway. But if you do like him, well, you can still, you know, pick him up with 50 Cent from Blue Water Comics. Although, you know, some of the artwork, I'm sure it doesn't look like 50 Cent. It may end up looking like Kanye West when you pick up and read the
like Kanye West, 50 Cent, and Madonna. That's strange.
That's an interesting combo.
And although I'm not, like, always crazy about Blue Water, I do have to give props. They do have a Vincent Price Presents Centennial Gallery one-shot book that collects all their classic covers of Vincent Price Presents, which some of them are really cool. So you can get that next week. And, of course, they have a new issue of the anthology Vincent Price Presents, issue number 33. It's been running quite a bit. You have some Boom stuff. You know, one thing, you know, we had mentioned last week about the Disney comics and how they're coming to a close at Boom. But what's not kind of mentioned that seems sad is that same issue of Views that just came out, the Farscape comics are coming to an end from Boom.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The last issue of that.
Oh, really?
It is. I know, because nobody talks about it because they're all talking about this stuff. But if you look at the new previews, they solicited the last issue of that, which is kind of sad because Rodney O'Bannon, who's a really brilliant guy, has, you know, been co-writer on that. And also, you know, the Stan Lee books are going away, too. I guess Soldier Zero was already its final issue already solicited. And then they solicited the last issues of, I think, Starborn and The Traveler.
Oh, man.
It's kind of been, like, swept under. So, yeah, if you see these comics in the next few weeks, support them. Check them out. Read them. You know, you're not going to maybe see them again. No, you probably won't see the Stan Lee ones again, except in trade. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm really sorry to hear that because I really have liked those books. Oh, man. I'm really sorry about that.
It is. It's the nature of the business. You know, the Farscape's been running for quite a bit, for quite a number of years, even before Boom had the Disney license for a while. And, you know, licenses are really hot at first, and then after a while, sales start to just decline over time unless you do major creative team shakeups. And so it's coming to an end. And, yeah, the Stan Lee, I know they tried changing, doing that kind of thing I was saying about with the change-ups for Soldier Zero when they brought in Abnett and Lanning. But, yeah, even with that, they, you know, they've all – and those kind of lasted for a year now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
But now Boom has moved on now. Yes.
So what's Boom going to do? I mean, what are they going to print?
Well, Boom has Planet of the Apes now. That's their new license. Yeah. They have the Hellraiser license. Kaboom is relaunching with now they have Snark. The guy, right. Roger Landridge, who did the Muppets, is now doing that. You know, they're doing another thing with the guy from Coheed and Cambria, who did Amory Wars. They have a new one called The Key of Z. So, I mean, that's kind of how it is. You kind of take a title, you run it into the ground as sales numbers go, and then you kind of have to move on. You know?
God, I'm just so disappointed. Once I like something, it's The Kiss of Death, because both of those, I liked all that stuff. You know, I liked all those things. I bought the Stan Lee stuff religiously because I always enjoyed them. I thought they were great fun. God, I'm really sorry to hear that. That is really disappointing.
Yeah.
All right, Ian, you got any preview stuff to talk about?
Not really, no. I mean, so I was just thinking, you know, so like Farscape going, that's one of Keith R. A. DeCandido's gigs coming to an end.
That's right. Yeah. I have to ask him about that next time I see him. God, I can't get over that. That is really disappointing. Man, a lot.
Yeah, and I'm surprised nobody's really talked about it either. I noticed it because they come before the Disney comics in the previews. So, I noticed it first, you know.
Mm-hmm. Nuts. Oh, man, I'm really sorry to hear that. Well, let me say a couple of things I know that are coming out this week that I think are worth getting. You talked about Mark Guggenheim. One of those miniseries he did is called Halcyon, and it's sort of a Watchmen-esque setup. And all of a sudden, the whole world goes right. Everything is together and it's all working right. And, of course, the Batman-like character can't stand that. And so he goes out to investigate what's going on. And, of course, there's dark and malevolent forces at work. Or at least it looks that way. And it's a really good book. It's coming out in trade. If you haven't read the issues, I've read the issues. I still want the trade because I like the book. I thought it was a good story. Also, Gladstone School for World Conquerors, which I'm coming to enjoy. Sort of, we could talk about books that focus on villains. This is a teen school that's teaching kids on how to be world conquerors. And it's got its fun moments to it. I have to say, it's actually kind of a fun book. So there's some good stuff going on in that. I think the final Zatanna, number 16, is coming out. Everyone, I think, is the last one. It's not. There's another one coming out. Green Lantern Corps is coming out. More of the Flashpoint stuff is coming to a conclusion. It's going to be a busy week for me, I can tell you right away. The Cyclops, which is really good. It's not the Marvel character. This is a character that's being hired to participate in a war, and they have the cameras on him so they can see what's going on with him while the war's going on, and it's just amazing. That's a good story. I really like it. Also, Damaged from Radical is coming out. I kind of like that one. And another one that I really, really like, the issue number 3 of...
Don't bother. I like...
Go ahead. What's that?
I said, don't bother with Damaged. Just pick up Driver for the Dead.
Okay.
You know, it's the same comic.
Oh, okay. Well, one more book I thought I wanted to mention. This is one that I really liked, and I'm actually trying to get an interview with the guy who was writing it. It's called Breakneck. It comes from 215 Inc. It's a very good book. We're talking about things from villain's perspective. This is a sort of a D-list villain who's the only one left because they basically don't pay any attention to him. The heroes have decided they're going to kill everybody who's a bad guy, and this one goes under the radar until he accidentally kills one of the heroes. Now they're after him with all their guns blazing. It's a good book. This is the last one. The art's really interesting in this one. I kind of like it. So I can't wait to see Breakneck number 3. I think that's going to be a good thing this week. Anybody got anything else you'd like to share before we call it a news and previews?
I was going to say Marksman number 2 comes out in a couple of weeks on August 24th. Yeah. It's from David Baxter, who has recently done an interview here with Wayne.
He's the interview with this episode, so good guy. One other thing I guess I should mention real quickly. Image talked about Scott Snyder, who does American Vampire. He's come up with a book called Severed, and it sold so well for Image, they've actually gone back to a second printing on that. We'd mentioned that in the news on the Sci-Fi Pulse website a couple days ago. But great fun, great interesting book. Kind of really spooky. You know, Mr. Snyder likes those kinds of things, so it's really good.
I was just going to say they were next to us at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Right.
Severed.
Right. That was good. I do like the book. I picked it up because Mr. Snyder, he's been writing some Batman stuff too that I really liked. So I picked it up. There's lots of good stuff to be had. So, you know, they better go with plenty of cash in hand when you go to the comic store. So, okay. Thanks, Ian. Yeah. And thanks, Gianluca. We'll see you again next week.
No props. That's all for now, folks.
Look at your local comic store and see what kinds of good things have come in recently. And I'm going to do them in alpha order just because it's a little easier on my poor soggy brain to be able to do that. One thing that's come in, two things for Angry Birds, that popular app for iPhones and iPads and the like. There's a 16-inch red jumbo plush doll, and there's also backpack clip-ons for the Angry Birds. Boy, has that thing ever taken off. Then there's also the Batman X Mimobot Robin 4G flash drive, which is about $25. There's also the Sterling Batman cufflinks, and boy, wouldn't you like to have that. So those good things are out. There's the Booster Gold Fan Club t-shirt, drawn by Dan Juergens. It's also the season for the beginnings of the wall calendars for 2012 to show up, and the first one is Conan the Barbarian, so that ought to be interesting. We also have the Disney Traditions marionettes. There's a Donald and a Goofy one. Doctor Who fans will want to get the floating pen, while Dracula fans will want to get the plush toys, the collector plush, the footsies plush, and the super deformed plush. All kinds of Dracula stuff. Frankenstein's got very much the same kinds of things, except he's got the back buddy as well, so he's got one more thing over Dracula. Then there's Ghostbusters light up Stay Puffed statue, a Slimer mug, a Stay Puffed mug, and Who You Gonna Call mug. G.I. Joe fans will want the Sky Striker jet with figure. Godzilla fans will want the 6-inch collectible figures. Green Lantern fans are going to be happy that there's cufflinks for them too. There's also movie metal, movie logo t-shirts which have a black background. There's also movie panels green t-shirts as well, and the Peruvian Intarsia, which is about $20. I'll have to see what that's all about. There's also action figures for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. There's a book on how to draw superheroes. There's Marvel Minimates, Mouse Guard, which is one of the great comics that's out there. There's a role-playing game boxed set for about $70. There's a Mr. Potato Head Elvis Presley 68 special. There's Mummy Footsies plush and Mummy Super Deformed plush. There are Pez dispensers with Justice League and also Winnie the Pooh. That's an interesting combination. There's the radioactive zombie full head mask. There are two Smurf things. There's No Smurf Left Behind board game. And the tag-along 24-figure gravity feed. There's also Star Wars Deluxe Republic Attack Ship. Super Mario 12-inch 3DS holder. There's also, getting back to Star Wars, there's Chewbacca footsies plush. Darth Vader's footsies plush. Jawa's R2-D2 Wicket footsies plush. And Yoda footsies plush.
Terminator fans will want to get the 7-inch action figures. And for the new Thundercats show on Cartoon Network, there are rendered panels t-shirts. There's also statues for Toy Story, Buzz Lightyear, and Woody. So those are going to be ones to get, but they're all $180 each, so that might be a little much. And, of course, we got to end up on zombies. There are Zombies Unleashed Franklin mini bust, and then there's a Pego Clown mini bust. So there's always something good for the zombie folks. And that's what's in your local comic store this week. Up the 24th episode of Wayne's Comics. I've got some good interviews that I'm lining up right now for you for future episodes, so be sure to tune in. And until next time, keep reading your comics.
And so I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.